Cape Talk.
Call 021 446 0567.
You may remember earlier this year we were joined on the show by Cape Town couple Kurai and Itai Matsika, who spoke with us about how their struggle to conceive had affected their relationship. You can always go back again and listen to that conversation. They were very open and very candid about their fertility journey and how it had impacted them as a couple. Their story had a happy ending, and Kurai gave birth to a beautiful baby boy a couple of years ago. This morning, as the fertility show Africa gets underway online this weekend, we're going to return to the issue of fertility. And joining me is Saskia Williams, a founder member and CEO of the Infertility Awareness Association of South Africa, whose desire to start the organisation stemmed from her own experience, many, many years of infertility. We're also joined by clinical psychologist Mandy Rodriguez, who's worked in the field of infertility for the past 24 years. She's presented and published various books and articles on the subject. And we'd love to hear from you too this morning, if you are someone, a couple perhaps, or an individual, on your own fertility journey. Maybe you've got a question for our guests, maybe you'd just like to give voice to your story and your experience. Do please get in touch. You can give us a call on 021 446 0567. Drop us a WhatsApp to 072 567 1567. Or you can send us an SMS 31567. Saskia, I'll start with you if I may. Morning. Great to have you with us.
Morning, Sarah Jane. Thank you for having us on.
When we say infertility or fertility, what do we mean?
Well, infertility is roughly defined as the inability to conceive after 12 months of having sexual intercourse under 35 and over 35 after 6 months.
So very often, for me, when I went to go and see my gynae after, or sort of when I wanted to have a baby, I was over 35, and we sort of said, right, what can we expect? We asked, what can we expect? I'm over 35, no real sort of health issues previously, and yes, we were told, give it a go for a year, and if you know, and then only then after do you perhaps come back to us with an issue or a concern, or we go for something else. How common is infertility?
Well, one in six couples suffer from infertility. Sure. It's 15% of people worldwide. And we actually advocate for earlier detection. So when you go to your gynecologist or your GP and they say, try for a year, come back, we actually suggest that you don't do that. And we suggest that you go and see a fertility specialist for a full testing on both you and your partner. So you can get a broader view of what the issue may be. There might not be any issue. And then, yes, sure, try for a year and come back. But knowledge is power when it comes to facing infertility and when you're trying to conceive. So knowing what you could potentially be facing is better earlier than later.
Tell us about the work that you do. I introduced you there as a founder member and the CEO of Infertility, the Infertility Awareness Association of South Africa. How big is the association, and what is the work specifically that you do?
Okay, so we were formed in 2013. It's a non-profit organization. We strive to improve the lives of men and women living with infertility in South Africa. So our mission is actually to educate the public around the disease. As we said, one in six couples suffer from the disease, so it is many people. And we don't want them to feel the stigma attached to it as much as it has been over the years. So we're trying to break the stigma when it comes to infertility. We also advocate for cover from the medical aids because infertility is the only prescribed minimum benefit disease on the exclusion list of most of the medical aids. So that means a diagnosis is covered, but treatment is not covered or doesn't need to be covered. Luckily for us, or luckily for patients, Discovery did include some cover this year. We don't feel it's enough, and not enough medical aids have actually done anything. So we fight for fair cover because we feel like it's being discriminated against when there's a list of over 200 prescribed minimum benefits and it's only infertility that's on the exclusion list. So that's really what IFAS is about, educating, empowering and advocating.
I'm fascinated to hear more about the stigma attached to infertility. Tell us about some of the conversations that perhaps you hear about from people that you support that's their experience. Is it are particular communities more problematic than others? What is the stigma? What is the thing? And I imagine that often it's directed at the female partner. in a very heteronormative sense. Would I be right?
It is, yeah. So, Jane. I think Mandy's best to answer this kind
sure.
of question. I can pass
over to her. Sure, let's welcome Mandy. Hi, Mandy Rodriguez. Hi. I just want to reintroduce you. Mandy Rodriguez is a clinical psychologist who has done an awful lot of work in the field of infertility. Lovely to have you with us, Mandy. Perhaps you could speak to that question.
Thanks, Sarah Jane. I'm doing a talk this morning on the kind of history of infertility, and we look back to even ancient Greece and centuries back, and it's always been the woman's kind of burden to bear. And you know, when there's a male factor involved, then there's a huge stigma attached. And we're finding that nowadays we're really trying to demystify infertility with all our talks we do with the FASA, with Fertility Show Africa, because it's not something that people talk about willingly. Mm. You know, you'll go and talk about cancer willingly and you'll talk about your treatment, but infertility is something that still, even if it's a couple problem, the woman is often blamed and the man keeps very quiet about it. And so we're trying to get men to get involved in this conversation and also to be more open and to realize that they're not alone. You know, there's one in six. That's two out of your group of friends. That's even more. And if we can just start the conversations going, couples are going to cope far easier because they're very isolated in this journey.
Very isolated. And as I was saying in the introduction there, we had a conversation on this show just a few weeks back with a couple from Cape Town who have an Instagram account in which they share their fertility journey. And even though they've been blessed with a baby now, they still use their experience to sort of help and support and advocate around issues of infertility. And they were very, very honest about how they each individually experienced the journey of infertility and then the impact that it had on them as a couple. What are some of the more common issues that arise between couples, the psychological impact, I guess, of infertility and how that then affects a relationship?
I think men and women cope quite differently with any challenge, really. If you look, historically, men are able to compartmentalize their infertility per se. They often come to my rooms and say, I married my wife to be with my wife, and they're able to conceptualize that there's children, there's work, there's hobbies, there's family. Whereas for women, infertility dominates every area of their life. So what we often see is the women are very, you know, every day is this burden that they're carrying, and it impacts their social relationships. And the men tend to more withdraw, and they're more optimistic, let me say, and more solution driven. Whereas women want to see what is the end road.
Yeah.
And what is the next step? And the men often will be, well, we take in this day by day, and they don't want to address that elephant in the room. So we have this phenomenon called independent coping, where men kind of cope in their ways by focusing on work, by focusing on hobbies, by focusing on friends. But for women, it is something they want to address. So neither talk about it. And it creates this void in the marriage. You know, if I go home and my wife is not feeling good today, I'm not going to bring up anything, and I'd rather just avoid talking about the topic.
Yeah.
Because, and then that independent coping, not the infertility per se, but that's where we see the problems emerge.
If you're just joining us this morning, we are joined by Saskia Williams, who's a founder, member and CEO of the Infertility Awareness Association of South Africa. And also the voice you've just heard, Mandy Rodriguez, who is a clinical psychologist who's done a great deal of work around infertility issues. They are both at the Fertility Show Africa, which gets underway online today. I want to go back to you, Saskia, if I may, on the psychological side of it and your own experience. What for you were some of the biggest challenges to overcome? And also, when you get to a point where either you sort of think, okay, well, it's not going to happen in the way that we thought it might happen, or for some couples that you do, they are, you know, they do end up being able to conceive. What are the What are the things that helped you go through and deal mentally with your process?
There used to be a support group online called Fertility Care, and a lot of women were on there when they were going through their cycles. So you'd go through a cycle of IVF and you'd have these buddies that you were going through the same cycle. It doesn't matter where you were doing it, in the country or even around the world. And you'd be able to talk to them about your emotions. Because as Mandy said, the husband doesn't always understand.
Yeah.
But they often feel guilty that we're the ones that are injecting ourselves every day and they're the ones that carry on as normal. So having support from people who understood what we were going through was important. We avoided family events. We didn't like to go to baby showers. We felt like we were being left behind by our peers because they would go on and have families.
Yeah.
We didn't have families. We got stuck in our careers a bit because you don't want to change your job when you want the benefits that's probably going to come with maternity leave or ability to take time off to go and have treatments. So you kind of get stuck in a rut, in limbo. You really do get stuck in limbo. But having an organization like AFASA would have been great for when we were going through treatment, because it was information. We hold events nowadays online, as you see with Fertility Show Africa. We partnered with live events with us. They're amazing. They've done a great job in getting this event to be online and actually reach many more people. But we'd hold events, we'd hold information sessions, we'd hold support sessions with Mandy, with fertility specialists would come and talk. And the more information that you get about your diagnosis, the better you can cope, because a lot of it's about losing control over your life, your plan. You know, I'm going to get married, I'm going to have children by the age of 35. You know, you have this plan. We all have this plan. Women generally have it all mapped out.
Yeah, by the time we're about six. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. And you lose complete control over your life. And then you just feel in limbo. And so having knowledge and having information about your diagnosis and the path that you can and the options that you can to complete your family, because we completed our family through adoption, and to have an endpoint in mind. So a lot of people have different places where some of them do three IVFs. Our limit was three for emotional and financial reasons.
Yeah.
Some people go on to have 10 or 11. So you, the only one that knows your limits, but it's something that I suggest that people do talk to their partner about almost from the beginning of their journey, because you need to know that, like, where the end is. You can't you can't live your life like this just on and on forever. So, you know, we had a plan B, which we can't call him if we don't call him a plan B.
As an adoptee, that's a hell of a triggering. I want to talk to you about that. I want to talk to you about plan B. When you... the journey for a woman of infertility, and you know, as an adoptee myself, you know, my mom couldn't have kids, and this was 40 years ago, nearly 45 years ago, and it affected her so deeply, and there was definitely not the access to support back then that there would be now. What and I think it's so important, particularly if you then go on to complete your family by adoption, that you don't talk about plan B's and things like that. How do you get to a point where you feel that you will be able to engage with your daughter and not make her feel like a plan B? I suppose the question is, have you dealt with, on how have you dealt with the fact that you knew, yeah, three goes at IVF and then not? How do you come to terms with the loss? Because it's one of the bedfellows of infertility is grief and loss, isn't it?
Yes. Mm. And mourning the loss of your DNA, which is a talk that that Mandy's actually doing this weekend. So actually, it was always on our plan in life to adopt. We were going to have, our plan was to have a biological child, and then to complete our family with adoption. My best friend growing up was adopted, so it was never a big issue for us. And as all plans go, they don't you don't got a plan. So that's, and I don't refer to our son as a plan B, because it was always in our plan. But for women going through infertility to have another, it's just, there are other ways to build families. And
yeah.
So one of the talks that we had that we recorded yesterday was normalizing adoption these days. And our social workers these days tell us that you need to talk about it with your children from birth. Literally, it becomes part of their narrative and part of the conversation. And Mandy can talk more about that. So with our son, we've talked about it. He's known all his life he's known all his life that he's turning 9 in December. He knows, our family knows, everybody knows. It's not a big secret. It's not an issue, but we did go for counseling because you do need to go through that process, like you said, of grief and mourning the loss of your DNA and just the loss of what you thought your life was going to turn out like. Within the discussion that I had with another adoptive mom, we wouldn't change anything because our boys are just the light of our lives. And families are made in a whole lot of different ways these days. So we are lucky and our babies are lucky compared to the generation, as you mentioned, with your mom and what she went through and keeping, and things weren't as open back then. So we are luckier these days that people are more open about talking about how families are made in different ways, and our kids will grow up knowing that that family's family. Love is what makes a family, not genetics.
Mandy, I want to ask you about support and for friends and family, perhaps, of a couple or an individual who is going through the fertility journey. What can we do to support? Or perhaps the question is, what should we not be doing? We have a thing, don't we, where we are, as soon as somebody gets married or they sort of signify that they're at a new stage in their life, we start talking about, when are you going to have a baby? When are you going to do this? When are you going to do that? As if it's any of our business at all. And I'm sure that we don't mean it in that way. But for somebody going through who is struggling, who every month is sort of waiting to, you know, perhaps not get their period or to go to it, it's very, very triggering and difficult, isn't it? So what can we do or what can we not do as friends, family, loved one, colleagues to take the pressure off, be supportive to somebody going through this journey?
You know what? I think as human beings, when we're faced with something that we don't have a solution to, our natural go-to is to try and give advice to people and say, maybe you should go and see my doctor. Maybe you should go and see an acupuncturist. Change your diet. Just relax and it'll happen. Yeah. Not because we're trying to be nasty, like you say, but because we are uncomfortable with the situation. So we're trying to offer solutions and directives. And, you know, the infertile couple, do not think that they absolutely know when they're ovulating. They absolutely have sought every avenue. So I often say to family and friends is, you know, I battled with fertility myself, and I still sometimes fall into that trap of saying to maybe my kids, so when is the baby happening? And I've got to bite my tongue. I work in this field. But it's just because that is our narrative in society, and we've got to actually listen to the couple and maybe just, you know, when they don't want to come to a baby shower or they don't have children, rather don't ask the question. Wait for them to give the lead in, or wait for them. And when they do, just support them in terms of listening. And the big thing we do in society now is we don't listen. We want to give advice. And all of us going through the field of or going through infertility, all we really want is someone to be with us and not give us any solutions. Just listen to what we have to say or don't say anything, or just say, I'm here for you, or how are you doing? But at the same time, we also want to demystify it. So I do try and encourage couples to maybe, if they can, approach the subject tentatively or kind of predict that someone's going to ask you that question and have a standard response. And in therapy, I often do a role play and say, this is your standard response in order to get people to say, not ask any more questions. So demystifying it with all these talks with, I mean, all of us in the field of fertility, which is incredible, most of us who run support groups like Saskia, like Council of Fertility, like Empty Wombs, we've all been through loss and infertility. So we've got this huge passion. So we may have constructed our families via different means, but we've all had this passion that we go out there and we advocates of, let's be open about it, let's share our story. And that tends to open the narrative for other people as well. Then to say, okay, Mandy and Saskia are open about this. So, you know, let me talk about it. And what's interesting with family and friends, the more you open about it, the more generations from 20 years ago might open up their story.
Yeah, that's
they haven't healed.
Yeah, yeah.
And they might bring up I also had a miscarriage.
We're going to have to leave it there. I want to thank our guests this morning and just remind you that the Fertility Show Africa gets underway this morning. You can go to the website www.fertilityshowafrica.com. Our guests this morning have been Saskia Williams, founder member of the Infertility Awareness Association of South Africa, and also Mandy Rodriguez, who's a clinical psychologist who's done a great deal of work around infertility. Thank you so much, ladies, for joining us this morning. Great pleasure to have you on the show.